Hello and welcome to the May 19th Annals of Internal Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Christine Lane, Annals Editor-in-Chief. I'm here to give you a quick summary of the new material you'll find if you go to annals.org. The best screening test for colorectal cancer is the test that a person is willing and able to get, leaving clinicians and patients with a variety of options. One option that gets little attention, at least in the U.S., is sigmoidoscopy. But the first article I'll highlight suggests that it should not be forgotten, at least for men. A randomized controlled trial of adults in Norway found that a single screening colonoscopy led to sustained reduction in colorectal cancer incidence for more than two decades after screening. Researchers from the Cancer Registry of Norway, University of Oslo, and colleagues followed over 98,000 adults aged 50 to 64 years in Norway who were randomly assigned to either once-only sigmoidoscopy screening with or without a stool test or no screening. After 23 years, sigmoidoscopy screening was associated with a 28% reduction in colorectal cancer incidence and a 37% reduction in colorectal cancer death in men. In women, sigmoidoscopy screening was associated with an 11% reduction in colorectal cancer incidence, but no corresponding reduction in death. The authors conclude that a single sigmoidoscopy screening provides a sustained benefit in colorectal cancer incidence reduction, particularly in men. These results suggest a possible reduction in the need for repeated examinations within the usual screening age range. It's spring in Philadelphia, where Annals is based, and we have already had days with temperatures nearing 90 degrees Fahrenheit. During the summer here and in many places around the world, rising temperatures raise concern for heat-related illness. The next article reports a study that asked, are heat-related illnesses increasing over recent years, and are there populations that are at particularly high risk? The researchers examined rates of hospitalizations for heat-related illness among U.S. adults from 1998 through 2022. The findings showed that hospitalization rates for heat-related illnesses have increased overall in the U.S., with Black adults experiencing the highest rates and greatest increases. The data were from the National Inpatient Sample data from 1998 to 2022 between the months of May to September annually, and they identified 168,530 heat-related illness hospitalizations. The authors speculate that rising temperatures and more frequent heat waves are likely contributing to the observed increases. They note that disparities in heat-related illness hospitalizations underscore the importance of prioritizing equity in climate action policies. Telemedicine can improve health equity by helping patients overcome barriers to in-person care, but meaningful policy changes are essential for lasting benefits, according to a new position paper from the American College of Physicians. ACP recommends that telemedicine strengthen and facilitate, not replace, in-person care, and should promote quality, equitable access, and a meaningful connection between patients and physicians. Telemedicine should be integrated into hybrid models of care that combine in-person and virtual services based on patient needs and clinical appropriateness. Regulators, physician practices, and other relevant entities must address barriers to telemedicine usage by investing in the infrastructure needed to support equitable access, including internet availability, device access, language services, disability accommodations, and digital literacy support. Policymakers should align reimbursement with the clinical value and appropriateness of telemedicine services rather than adopting a one-size-fits-all payment policy and establish clear, evidence-based national standards that reduce unnecessary variation across state and federal requirements. Another new American College of Physicians policy position paper argues that the U.S. Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services should reform Medicare Advantage to protect patient health and realign the plan option with its original purpose, which was to deliver fair, high-quality, and fiscally responsible care to older adults and people with disabilities. Medicare Advantage is a private option in Medicare that now enrolls more than half of all Medicare beneficiaries. The plans are offered by approved private insurers and integrate Part A and Part B of traditional Medicare coverage into a single plan with additional coverage options such as prescription drugs, dental, vision, and even gym memberships. Among the reforms that ACP advocates are requiring plans to provide transparent, standardized benefit designs, which would improve beneficiaries' decision-making, enhance accountability, and ensure that plan offerings prioritize meaningful health benefits rather than serving as an incentive to select a plan. ACP strongly advises robust oversight and regulation of Medicare Advantage marketing practices to prevent misleading advertisements and says that plans engaging in deceptive marketing should face penalties. Medicare Advantage plans should also be required to provide clear, standardized cost disclosures to protect beneficiaries from unexpected financial strain, and CMS should ensure that Medicare Advantage plans prioritize affordability alongside access to care. In addition, the position paper calls for plans to enact balanced and transparent risk adjustment mechanisms to better reflect patient complexity and avoid excessive coding practices. Next is a commentary that I wrote with Drs. Kelly Graham and Sarah Fazio, internal medicine physicians at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center and Harvard University. In the commentary, we warn of the potential consequences of a predicted shortage of 90,000 primary care physicians by 2040. With only 9% of internal medicine residents choosing primary care, we emphasize the multiple strategies necessary to revitalize the primary care internal medicine pipeline. These strategies include reforming the reimbursement model to more accurately reflect the effort of primary care physicians, developing multidisciplinary primary care teams to reduce primary care physicians' administrative burden and burnout, and implementing graduate medical education funding reform to ensure internal medicine residents receive equal training in both inpatient and outpatient settings. We argue that the existing funding and training models communicate a lack of prestige among primary care physicians and call on accrediting agencies, residency programs, and medical schools to invest in strategies that sustain interest in primary care careers to meet the needs of the U.S. population. One of the administrative burdens that primary care physicians and other clinicians shoulder is prior authorization. The authors of the next article I'll highlight reviewed the prior authorization rules for the U.S. insurers Aetna, Humana, and United Healthcare and found little consistency in their prior authorization rules. As part of a research program on the potential benefit of standardizing healthcare contracts, researchers from Stanford University examined authorization rules across commercial insurers and whether those rules could be organized into a single searchable database like the ICD-10 system. They analyzed publicly available manuals and reviewed thousands of procedure and service codes to determine when prior authorization was required and what information clinicians had to submit to the insurer to obtain approval for a particular test or treatment. They found that while all three insurers required prior authorization for some services, the majority of services required prior authorization from only one of the three insurers, and the criteria and documentation requirements differed widely. The authors conclude that assembling these rules into a shared database is feasible and could improve transparency for both patients and clinicians, but the unexplained differences across insurers warrant further research on the appropriateness of this administrative barrier to patient receipt of some interventions ordered by their clinicians. Human health and natural systems are intrinsically linked. Stable natural systems enable healthy human life. Yet the developers of clinical guidelines lack methods to assess the impact of health interventions on the planet. To begin to fill this void, the GRADE Working Group established the Planetary Health Project Group in 2023 to develop guidance for integrating planetary health into guideline recommendations. Go to annals.org to read what they propose. In 2025, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services rescinded guidance directing hospitals to provide emergency abortions to stabilize health-threatening conditions. The move fueled ongoing debates about the sufficiency of medical exemptions to abortion bans. Although all 44 states with first trimester restrictions make exceptions to protect the life and to protect the health of the pregnant person, both exemption types have been criticized as ambiguous, and as a result, the subject of litigation. The authors of the next article summarize the clinical context of health-threatening complications and synthesize the limited evidence about their frequency. They then suggest reforms for legislators, medical boards, and hospitals to ensure pregnant individuals can receive needed emergency care. The topic of this month's In the Clinic article is giant cell arteritis, the most common vasculitis in individuals 50 years and older. Go to annals.org to refresh your knowledge with this practical review and obtain CME and MOC credit if you do. Finally, I want to mention a new IM Matters news article that discusses developments that make it easier for internal medicine physicians to incorporate human papillomavirus testing into cervical cancer screening. That brings us to the end of this podcast. Thanks for listening, and I hope you go to annals.org to read the new articles I've highlighted and the many others you'll find as you peruse the journal site. Thanks to Beth Jenkinson, Andrew Langman, and Bernie Turner for their technical support.